Okay, good morning everybody, and welcome to our visitors. I want to kick off today. We have three speakers today. I am here till 10:25. Rabbi Kagan will be focusing much more on the issue of the translation of the Torah into Greek and why that's a thing. I'll mention it briefly today, but you have to kind of get into the headspace of why that's even relevant to us, and he'll talk a little bit more on that. And then the third session of the day, the final one from 11:30 to 12:30, is Mrs. Chaya Levine, and was mentioned yesterday. Mrs. Levine works with Rabbi Edelstein downstairs in running Neve, and she very tragically was involved in the massacre at the shul here in Haranov a few years ago, where there was a pigua, there was a terrorist attack. Rabbi Kagan mentioned that this mural on the wall was painted by the group that year as a kind of group therapy to try and work their way through that. Six people were killed, including her husband, in that terrorist attack just a few blocks away here in Haranov then. And she will be talking about, not just about that, but about how she connects with that and connects with the past session. She wanted to make sure that you knew before she speaks that that's her background, and therefore that won't be a surprise when she's speaking. And I'm sure you'll find her speech very interesting and relevant to the day. So as far as I'm concerned, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to help set some kind of a scene, to try and work out what's going on with Asara B'Tevet. It's the only fast that sort of stands on its own. We'll see soon there are four major fasts in the year, and they all come together with something else. Meaning, obviously, Yom Kippur is a separate thing. Yom Kippur has its own, movement from Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur through Sukkot. But the rabbinic fast, Tisha B'Av, comes at the end of a period of mourning, which starts with Sheva Asar B'Tammuz and ends with Tisha B'Av. Tzom Gedalia is part of the whole Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, etc. But Asara B'Tevet is kind of stuck in the middle of Tevet, in the middle of December, early January. What am I meant to do with it? How am I meant to relate to it? It's a very short fast, you know, here. I mean, if you live in Buenos Aires, it's probably not so short, or South Africa. But here, again, the fast goes out at 5:30, 5:15, even earlier. It's not one of the major fasts. It's a lot like Tisha B'Av. You're halachically, it's perfectly fine to have a shower. It's perfectly fine to brush your teeth. If you want to brush your teeth, you just can't drink the water, etc. So it's a minor fast. On the other hand, it's a very significant fast, and I want to try and understand what's going on so that as you begin to feel hungry a little bit during the day, you'll know why you're feeling hungry. It's a very clever system if you think about it, fasting. It's not that somebody wants to give you a hard time. You know, the rabbis want to make you unhappy. It's that every time you get that little tweak in your tummy, it's a kind of internal alarm clock reminding you, why am I not eating today? That's right. Remember what happened in the shir, and let's connect to it. So there's this little thing reminding you all through the day, saying, yes, just remember what you're fasting for. And in that sense, it's a brilliant system. It won't do you any long-term harm not eating for a few hours. It'd probably be quite good for most of us. And as long as you don't dehydrate. Obviously, like I said yesterday, if you're feeling sick, if you're on medication or whatever, then there's all sorts of reasons why you might not have to fast. Come and speak to me if that's what you want to talk about. Now, everybody knows, I think, that Asara B'Tevet is about Nebuchadnezzar, but it's about much more than Nebuchadnezzar. Just look at the sheet that I've given you. I brought you here just a little time lapse. Nebuchadnezzar was the dictator of the world towards the end of the first Beit HaMikdash. His country was Babel. Babel is up to the north. It's now today where Iraq is. Iraq up to the north, northeast of Israel. He assumed the throne and then gradually exiled the Jewish people. There were two main shlavim, two main waves of exile. First of all, he took King Yechoniah of Judah. He conquered Israel. He made it a vassal state. He said, we won't destroy you. You'll just have to be part of the Babylonian Empire. And then he said, you know something, maybe we're going to take some people away. So he took Yechoniah, and you know from the beginning of Megillat Esther that Mordechai was taken away together with Yechoniah. All of the leaders of the Jewish people were taken away at that stage. And he put Gedaliah ben Achikam in charge of Israel and said, just do what Gedaliah says. And of course, the Jewish people rose up and killed Gedaliah, which is why we have Tzom Gedaliah after Rosh Hashanah. Gedaliah was the Jewish leader that Nebuchadnezzar put in place, and the Jewish people said, we don't want any Babylonian puppet telling us what to do, and they killed him, and that was a disaster. Because at that point, Nebuchadnezzar says, listen guys, I would have just let you do your own thing as part of the Babylonian Empire, but now that clearly you don't know how to behave appropriately, you've killed your own leader, I'm going to completely smash the whole place to pieces and take everybody away. It's one of the difficult questions in Jewish history. How do we know as a people when to be independent and assertive, like Hanukkah? Let's get against Antiochus, etc., and make an independent state and do our own thing, and why do we don't care what the non-Jews say, and etc. And how do we know when we have to turn around and say, hey guys, we live in the real world, we're not in charge of the world, we have to play the game, we have to do the politics, we can't just say everyone else can jump off the roof. It's hard to know when to say those things. And Hanukkah is an example of when it worked to be independent and assertive, and some Gedaliah is when it didn't work to be independent and assertive. And that's a question we have today, right? When you turn on the news and you see another United Nations vote or some government to do something negative against Medinat Israel, what attitude should we take? Should we be saying, you know something? They can go jump in the lake. We don't care. We have our own country. We do our own thing. Why should we just run around doing what everybody tells us? Maybe that's the right response. And sometimes the answer is, I don't know, maybe we should be making more of an effort, maybe we should be making more political deals and trying to do what we can, and hard to know. Jewish history tells us that sometimes one works and sometimes the other is right, and that's part of the whole thing. Here, it didn't work to kill Gedaliah, and Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Yerushalayim today, the 10th of Tevet, and there was a long period, it was 2 years, guys, it was 2 years until Tisha B'Av, when he actually destroyed Yerushalayim, and that two-year period is an important period that we'll talk about as to why it took so long and why there was a gap and what we were meant to do with that gap. My aim for you today is not just to teach you history. That's not my purpose. It's to try and give you some understanding of what you and I are meant to get out of Asarah B'Tevet in terms of an ongoing thing, and then you can remember this next year, the year after, etc. But giving that background with Nebuchadnezzar might help. Now, the key pasuk is number one. Look at number one, please, guys. Zechariah. Zechariah has a pasuk. He says, "Koma Hashem Tzvakot, Tzom Haravi'i, V'Tzom Hachamishi, V'Tzom Hashivi'i, V'Tzom Ha'asiri." Four fasts, Zechariah says. Now, these are the months. Tzom Haravi'i, which is the fourth month? Which is the fourth month of the Jewish year? Tammuz. Okay, that's in Tammuz, because the month starts in Nisan. Tzom Hachamishi, Av. Tzom Hashivi'i, Tishrei. V'Tzom Ha'asiri. Tevet, right? The fast in Tammuz, the fast in Av, the fast in Tishrei, and the fast in Tevet. These are going to be days of great simcha, the happiness, dancing, gladness. Ulemoadim tovim, they're going to be new chagim. V'ha'emet, v'ha'shalom, ehavu. But, or and, you must love shalom and emet. Now what's that got to do with anything? I don't know, what do you think? What's that got to do with anything? But you must love shalom and emet. How do you connect the two things in that verse? On the one hand, he says, these fast days, the fast of Tammuz and the fast of Av and the fast of Tishrei and the fast of Tevet, will one day become days of great simcha. But you must love peace and you must love truth. Come on, tell me, what do you think? Connection?
Well, peace and truth.
You could say that. So that's the one obvious chat, which is, how are you going to make the fasts of these 4 months into Yimei Sason V'Simcha? The answer is, you have to have an agenda of Emet and Shalom. And that will take us from one place to the next. Yes, Zoe.
Also, I think if you love people and truth, maybe that allows you to more honestly recognize our role in how things went down, which might bring a greater appreciation of the days of Simcha when they become days of Simcha.
That's very interesting. Meaning, Geula and Zoe had two slightly different angles on it, which is, Zoe says that it's almost like a natural thing. If you have a better understanding of peace and truth, you will gain more appreciation of what went wrong, and it will help you kind of move from place A to place B. And Geula wants to say that we should actually have an active agenda of Emet and Shalom, and push that forward, and we can work out ways to increase Emet and Shalom in the world, and that will bring us from where you are now to the place that starts on the Simcha. The two things are completely complementary. Just Geula is a bit more of an activist, okay? And Zoe is a bit more of a kind of, I don't know what it's not the opposite of an activist, but a kind of realist in that sense, which may fit their personalities quite well, actually, but you never know. The point here is this. There is a process, guys. Today is not meant to be a fast day. And it shouldn't have to be a fast day. And the answer as to how to stop it being a fast day is in this room. That's the point that Zachariah is making. By the way, the most beautiful the posuk from Zachariah that you can find on the walls of Yerushalayim is where? Do you know? There is a square in the old city called Bati Machatzia, which is where all the kids play football. All the little old city Jewish kids in the Jewish quarter, they all play football, they run around. You know what I'm talking about? It's down, you know where Midrashet Eshel is? You've been to Eshel? The old Rava, exactly, the old Rava. You know, if you go to visit your friends who are in Eshel, they are in that square, and there's all these little kids running around screaming, going nuts. And there's a posuk on the wall from Zechariah that Zechariah said when the Yerushalayim was in destruction, and the posuk reads, that famous posuk said, once again there will come a time when children play, and old people, old ladies and old men sit on benches watching the children play in the streets of Yerushalayim. And that posuk is there. And these kids don't realize that they are playing, they think they're playing ball. They are playing a prophecy. Okay? They are living out a prophecy because that's what Zechariah envisaged before, when the first temple was destroyed, before even the second, and certainly before now. So Zechariah has a lot of very interesting things to say. It's worthwhile a read. You know, it's not a very long book, by the way. It's only about 8-9 chapters. You can pick it up and flick through it probably in a half an hour in English. So it's worth a read. Now, what does that mean? So what should we be doing today? So look at number 2 for a second. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, Zechariah Lutzam, you call these days a fast. Zechariah Lutzam v'simcha, but then you call them Sasam v'simcha. Make up your mind. Which is it? So here's an interesting thing. Amar Rav Papa. Hachika Amar, this is what he means. Bizman sheyesh shalom. If there's shalom in the world, Rashi says, sheyisal shruim alad matam, that the Jewish people are in their land, okay? Yihiyu l'sason l'simcha, then these are going to be holidays. Yesh shmad. What is shmad? Shmad is? You know what shmad is, the word shmad? Shmad is oppression. Like Holocaust oppression, pogroms. If there's shmad, okay, some, then you have to fast. Ein shmad ve'ein shalom, if there's no shmad and no shalom, then what's the answer? Look at what it says. Rotsu mitanin, if you want to, you can fast. Rotsu ein mitanin, if you want to, then you don't have to fast. Ihachi Tisha B'Av nami, does that apply to Tisha B'Av as well? I'm a Rav Papa, no. Shani Tisha B'Av always is a fast, even when we're in peace. Hoyel v'huchlu v'od soros, so many negative things happened on Tisha B'Av, and it's actually an interesting question. Did they used to keep Tisha B'Av in the time of the Second Temple as a fast day or as a feast day or whatever? That's a side point, not for now. But what did he just say? He just said the fast we have today, if we're in a time of shalom, then it's a holiday. If we're in a time of shmad, of oppression, destruction, yeah, then it's a fast day. If we're in a time which is neither one nor the other, then it's kind of not clear. If you want to fast, fast. If you don't want to fast, don't fast. And 1 second, Zahava. So, you see, it's not just either a time of great happiness or great tragedy. There's a lot of time which is kind of somewhere in between. Which is, I think, what we have now, Nachon? Do you agree with me? I don't think we can say we're living in a time of complete simcha, with everything sorted out. Okay, Baruch Hashem, there are many millions of Jewish people living in Israel and people living in peace all around the world, but there's a lot of trouble and there's a lot of problems. A lot of people not in Israel. There's a lot of people not, you know, making it work, and there's a lot of problems in the world. So we're not in the time of shalom. We're not in the time of shmad. It's not a time, it's not like the Second World War and the Shoah. We're in the middle, no?
Because Sasa aren't being advertised as wanted.
Okay, so we'll see in a minute how that works. Your point, Zahava, was? Okay? So, one thing I think it's important to realize is, from the Gemara there, that a lot of times you're living in a kind of in-between time. And trying to read the in-between time is not easy. It's easy to be extreme. Everything's great. Everything's terrible. It's much harder to turn around and say, well, actually, you know something? I'm not sure if it's great or terrible. It's kind of sometimes great and sometimes not great, and where are we in the middle? That's the gray area which most of life is for most people, and that's what you have to read. Now, Zoe's asking, hey, nobody told me that this fast was voluntary. You told us we have to fast. And the answer is yes, because the halacha is, look over at number 3, the achshav, says the Magid Mishnah already on the Rambam, Nagu Hakol, the minhag of everybody, is like the Rambam writes, Kemosh Kosef Rabbeinu, Zaharihu Chova al Kol Yisrael, Ad Shi Bane Beit HaMikdash. And now everybody has to fast until there's a Beit HaMikdash. Now, Klal Yisrael accepted, men, women, etc., that they will fast until there's a Beit HaMikdash. And so even though we're in this kind of middle time, okay, nevertheless, everybody still fasts. There are a lot of women that don't fast on the minor fasts. Yeah? I think the reason is because a lot of the Hasidic women don't fast, I think because a lot of the time they were either nursing or pregnant. That's kind of where it came from. I think that's really what it is. I mean, my daughter's nursing, and I told her that she doesn't have to fast, certainly not Paschal, so it's probably not at all. And I think a lot of women kind of did, but there's no reason why women shouldn't fast. It's not something which relates to men. As long as you're in good health, the obligation is to fast. Therefore, but just at least from the Gemara, you can see that you're in this kind of middle time. Now, I just want you to point out something else. Look at number 4, 5, and 6, and then we'll kind of move into a different vein. 4 is the story of how the whole Nebuchadnezzar thing happened. I just want you to be aware of this story. It's not pretty. I'm going to give you a trigger warning, okay? What you're about to read in Sefer Malachim is a bit graphic. Okay? Fine. Vayhi b'shnat ha-tishi'it. It was in the 9th year, l'malko b'chodesh ha-tiri, in the 10th month, that's the month of Tevet, b'esol l'chodesh, on the 10th of the month, this today, right? Says the Tanakh, ba Nebuchadnezzar melech Babel, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, here, Dina, take one of these. Okay, the king of Babel came, Huva kol chelo, him and all his armies, al Yerushalayim, against Yerushalayim, vayichan aleha, and he camped around it, vayivnu aleha dayek saviv, and he built like a siege wall around it. Okay, so this is the day that it came. V'tavo ha'ir b'matzor ad ashtei asar shana lemelech Tzidkiyahu, and the city was in siege for, as I said before, a number of years. And there was a famine. Vatisha l'chodesh v'yichazak harav. There was a terrible famine ba'ir. V'lo hayalechem la'am ha'aretz. The people had nothing to eat. And eventually, v'tibaka ha'ir v'kol anshei ha'milchama ha'layla derech shah ben ha'chomotayim. Let's just go on a little bit. Eventually, the walls were breached. Tzidkiyahu tried to escape. Go to Pasuk Hey. V'yirufu chel kastim acha ha'melech. Tzidkiyahu escaped through a cave. There is a cave called the cave of Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu's cave. Have you seen that? You know what I'm talking about? Near, not Ir David. No. If you go to, you know where the train stops for in Kikar Safra, and you walk down to Shar Yafo. See, I'm going to try and help you understand your Yerushalayim a little bit. Here's the old city. Here's the train that goes like this. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Here is Kikar Safra, the area, and you get off the train and you walk down to the Jaffa Gate. Nachon? Here's the Jaffa Gate and here's the old city. Huh? So instead of walking down the Jaffa Gate, you walk for a minute down here, not far, I mean not as far as the Arab quarter as here, then there is an entrance to a tourist attraction, and it's called the Cave of Tzidkiyahu, Tzidkiyahu's Cave. And it's kind of like stalactites and stalagmites and all that kind of stuff, and rock formations, and they do concerts and stuff there. This is called Tzidkiyahu's Cave. I'm not sure if it's exactly what the Pasuk is talking about, but somehow or other, Tzidkiyahu escaped through a cave and then down through a tunnel and ended up coming out in the hills down to the east. But if you want to go to that cave, it's not that great, I must tell you. It's like, okay, they charge like 10 shekels to get in. It's worth doing it once, you know. It's if you can go when they're having a light show. You know, Yerushalayim has a light show every year, a couple of light shows, so they do a thing in the cave then. So do it then. Yeah, do it then when they have the light show. But anyway, going back, that was just a little, in parentheses, advert for the Jerusalem tourist board. Okay? So if you look here, it says that he tried to escape, Potokei, v'yisigu oto, they caught him, v'arvot yerecho, down by Jericho, okay, v'kol chelo nafotso me'alav, and they took away his armies, etc. V'yisbasu et hamelech, they captured the king, King Tzidkiyahu, the last king of Israel, right? V'yalu oto ala melech Babel, they brought him up to Babel, livracha to Rivla, v'yidabru ito mishpat, and they put him on trial, the king of Israel. This was just the end of the destruction of the first temple. The etzbenei Tzidkiyahu shachatu le'inav, and the children of Tzidkiyahu, they slit their throats in front of his eyes. Okay? The etzenei Tzidkiyahu iver, and then they gouged his eyes out personally. The yasruhu benuchushtayim v'yaveu Babel, and they put him in irons and they dragged him off to Babel. And thus ended the family of the last king of Israel. Okay? That's what happened. And today was the beginning of that process, if you like. The 10th of Tevet. But it was a whole process, and it lasted for a long time. Also, today was a day, interestingly, what was happening over in Babel at the time, because there were a whole bunch of Jews in Babel, I told you before. So look in number 5. Vayhi devar Hashem Eli. This is Yecheskel saying, when did God start speaking to me? B'shana ha'tishi'id b'chodesh ha'asiri b'esel ha'chodesh. Yecheskel Hanavi got his nevuah also today. He was at the other side in Babel. He was already with the Jews that went to exile. And he got this prophecy that today something bad is happening in Yerushalayim. And God says to him, Ben Adam, tav lecha et shem hayom, et etzem hayom azeh. You have to write etzem. What does etzem mean? Like this very day, you have to write this very day down. Smach Melech Bavel al Yerushalayim. The king has come close to Yerushalayim. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Keep saying Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. There's only one other day in the calendar, the Jewish calendar, that's called Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. You know what that is? Yom Kippur. Exactly. And therefore, there's this interesting connection between Sheva Asar B'Tammuz, Tzara B'Tevis, and Yom Kippur. I don't know if you know that whenever one of the fast days falls on a Shabbos, you always push it off. Yeah? You always push it off. If Tisha B'Av falls on a Shabbos, you always push it off to Sunday. Yeah? If Sheva Asar B'Tammuz falls on a Shabbos, you always push it off to Sunday. There are only 2 days of the Jewish year fast days which you'd actually fast on Shabbos. One of them is Yom Kippur. No, Tisha B'Av you don't fast on Shabbos. Tisha B'Av push it to Sunday. Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, you fast on Shabbos. Because it's a happy day, why shouldn't you fast? Okay? And Asara B'Tevis. If Asara B'Tevis falls on Shabbos, the halacha is you would have to fast even on Shabbos. But it never happened. Because the way the Jewish calendar works, Asara B'Tevis cannot fall on the Shabbos. But it can fall on Friday. And every now and then you have this strange business, because of this pasuk that this has a special status for Etzem Hayom Hazeh, that when Asara B'Tevis falls on a Friday, you fast into Shabbos. You remember this? Do you remember doing this? You have to make all of Shabbos when you're fasting. Do you remember this? You're a bit older than them. The last time it happened was 2013. It doesn't happen very often. The next time it'll happen is 2020. Okay? So it doesn't happen that often. 2013, just in case you're interested, that day, Asara B'Tevis, that Friday when everyone was fasting, that was the day in Yerushalayim of Snowmageddon. In 2013. Yeah, where it snowed for 3 days from Wednesday through Friday, and there was 3 feet of snow in Har Nof.
Cool.
That was that Friday in 2013. They were mamash. I've got the pictures. They were Hasidic boys sitting on Hakablan in igloos. Igloos. They made igloos with bricks, okay? Like this high.
That's so cool.
And they were sitting, it was cool until all the power went out. Then it was not cool. It was freezing, okay? And then till all the old people started falling on the ice, until the Rabbonim told people not to go in the streets on Shabbos, not to go to shul, etc., because they ran out of plaster casts. What do you call that stuff you put on your arms? Yeah? You don't call it plaster casts. You call it...
Elbow pads?
No, the... Cast. They ran out of that stuff because all these people had broken all their arms and legs. Because I'm telling you, at the beginning it was fun. I just remember sending these to an Israeli guy in shul on Friday morning, looking out the window, and he just looked out and he said, "Ze katastrofa." This is what he said. "Ze katastrofa." It was unbelievable. That was the Friday, the 10th of Tevet, and we were all fasting. It was really weird. We all wanted to play in the snow, but we were all fasting, and the fast went into Shabbos, and we were all making Shabbos. It was like people abandoned cars. It was ridiculous. You know, I know they say that Yerushalayim goes nuts when there's an inch of snow. Okay, there were 35 inches of snow. You couldn't open the doors because... Anyway, that's not going to happen again for another 100 years, they say. So don't get too excited. But that was the 10th of Tevet. And you know a fun fact? You know that Gemara that talks about Hillel on the roof of the Bet Midrash in the snow, looking down into the Bet Midrash? And it says that happened on the 10th of Tevet? In Tevet, the snow in Tevet, that was the day. That day, the snow began to happen. That was Dafyomi. That day of Hillel on the roof in the snow in Tevet, looking down into the Ben Midrash. It was really really funny. Okay, fine. Now that's enough for now. So just to backtrack. What am I trying to get out of this? First of all, understand the history in the background. Nebuchadnezzar made a siege on Yerushalayim, but it lasted a long time. There was a lot of time to do tshuva. There was a lot of delay. If you go over the page, please, over to page 3, I want to really give you a kind of reference back into the idea of Shalom v'ha'emet to try and understand how you relate to that today. Look at number 10 and 11. These are two important Rambams for any fast day, but certainly for today. Look at what it says. Yesh Sham Yamim. There are certain days in the year. Shekol Yisrael mitanim bahem. That all the Jewish people fast. Mipnei hatzarot she'iru bahem. Because of bad things that happened on this day. Kedei lo'orer halavavot. Now, why are you doing it? He's going to tell you why. Lo'orer halavavot. What does that mean? Lo'orer halavavot. To wake up your mind. to wake up your mind, to get you thinking. Lev really means a mind. Okay? V'liftoach darkei ha-tshuva. To try and open up a little bit of tshuva, to try and make you work. What does tshuva mean? Obviously, you know what tshuva means. But, like, in the sense that not, oh, I must do this better, but there has to be a way that I can improve in certain areas of life. And we have to remember the things that we've messed up in. And the things that our parents, the baggage that our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents left us, okay, which is not our fault, but we're left with the mess. Shehayu kamaseinu, because they also messed up. Ata adshigaram lahem v'lanu oisam atzoros, until it led to where it led to. Shebezichron dvarim elu nashuv lehetet. Because, not because we're just beating our heads, you know, with planks of wood and saying, oi, oi lanu. But because remembering these things and understanding and being aware of them can make us identify the problems and then identify the solutions. Fast days are actually very positive days. They're days which are there to try and get you to just take a break from all the stuff that distracts you all the time and think about what are the things that I can actually do to kind of make the situation better. And there are lots, and he's going to give you some suggestions. Key number 11. All these somot, and we're going to talk a little bit about what the word som means. One day they'll all be gone. We won't need them anymore. The Lord, not only that. They will be yamim tovim. And he brings the pasuk from Zechariah that we read. Now, what was the problem? Somehow or other, you have to find a way, and I think in terms of the tshuva, first of all, what does tzom mean? There are two words for a part. Okay? What's a ta'anit? What's the shoresh of the ta'anit? No, the ta'anit is not the shoresh. Yeah, inui. Inui. Like, what does inui mean? Torture is a bit strong, okay? We don't like to torture our students at Midrash HaSeila, unless they behave really badly. Okay? Inui as in self-denial, affliction on some level. Meaning there has to be something that makes us just not just think of ourselves. Negate on a certain level ourselves to think of the bigger picture. One of the biggest challenges for all of us, especially you guys, here I'm going to have my like regular bash at millennials, although you're not millennials, the truth is, you're post-millennials is the truth. But people are very into themselves these days, right? No, aren't they, really? I mean, I am as well, come on. I mean, I'm part of the problem, right? But, like, you know, I've worked with teenagers long enough, I'm turning back into one. But everyone's very into themselves. And the first thing is ta'anit, which is be less into yourself. Be less into yourself. Inui means, you know, let's refocus outside. And don't eat and don't do other things because that's a bit indulgent. But what does psalm mean? What word in modern Hebrew sounds like a psalm? Which is tsama. What's a tsama? Your braids in your hair. A tsama is a braid in your hair. What's a tsomet? A junction. Like the tsomet? Tsomet this, tsomet that, tsomet this. What have a tsom, a tsama, and a tsomet all got in common? Intersections. Exactly right. Intersections. The whole point is the tsomet is called a tsomet because everything comes together. And a tsama, a braid, is a braid because all the braids braid together. And therefore a tsom, Rav Soloveitchik said a tsom is not just a ta'anit. A ta'anit is like focused on you not putting yourself in the middle. A tsom is connecting everything within Klal Yisrael. A tsom is only a tsom because the main purpose of the tsom is bringing the people together. Have a look at number 13 for a second. Esther says, Lech knos el et kol ha-yudim. Gather the Jews together. Knos, knisa. There has to be knisa. V'tsumu alai. Make a tsom for me. Say Chazal, Mikan, from here you see, She'ikru shel tzom, the main purpose of the tzom is not the not eating, it's the asifa. What's an asifa? Gathering. It's getting Jewish people together. V'chein hu omer, and that's why it says, Kachu tzom, karu apsara, apfu, tzakenim, in Yoel, etc., etc. And so too, number 14, Amar Reb Chana Rab Zab Bar Bizna, Amar Reb Shimon Chasida, kol tanit, even if you say for tanit, she'ein bo mitoshei Yisrael, if you don't have the Jewish people together, the good ones, the bad ones. You know what they say? Tzibur. What does Tzibur mean? In Hebrew, what does Tzibur mean? It means a community. Okay? So they say it stands for what? Tzadikim, Benonim, V'rasha'im. Yeah? The Jewish people is not the Jewish people unless you get them all together. The good ones, the medium ones, the bad ones. So the Gemara says, Kol tani she'enbo miposhe Yisrael, if you don't have the Jewish people connected, even the ones that don't keep, that don't do, that don't keep Torah, shehari, that is not a tanit. Ain't a tanit? Shehari achel bana richara. It was in the Ketoret, there was this smell. It was made of many smells. One of them was the chelbana. The chelbana was stank. It stank like a refed, like a cow shed, like, it stinks, chelbana. So I'm told. Okay? If you don't have the chelbana in, none of the Ketoret works. Meaning, the Ketoret is not the Ketoret without the chelbana there too. So too, the people are not the people without everybody there. And therefore, one of the focuses, especially of Asara B'Teva, is as follows. The people have time. They have 2 years. They could look around and say, something's going on. Something bad is happening. How can we fix it? They didn't fix it because they didn't focus out on the people. And I'll show you a source that says that explicitly. One of the things that I think you should be doing on Asara B'Teva, specifically on every fast day, is working out, how can you not only defocus on yourself for just a day, a tanit, but how can you focus on connecting the Jewish people? What can you do, what can I do, to make the Jewish people more cohesive with each other? And actually the Jewish people, Baruch Hashem, are not doing too badly. I know everybody always says, oh, everybody hates each other, everybody judges each other. I'm not sure I agree with that analysis. I think there's a long way to go, and I think there are a lot of communities that are not working together like they should do. But you can do something about that. You can make a difference. You can make a micro difference. You can make a macro difference. You can work out, what can I do to somehow make Klal Yisrael a better place? Is that going to be outreach on some level? Is that going to be connecting other people? Is that going to be doing projects for this or for that? That's the purpose of trying to work that out. Let me show you number 12. Really, really strong source. Really strong source. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeGabriel. This was at the end of the first temple, exactly today's date that they're talking about. So God says to Gabriel in this midrash, Lech Rusham al Mitzchan Shel Tzadikim. Go and make a mark on the heads, on the foreheads of the Tzadikim, a Tav. The word Tav. What's a Tav? Tav is a letter in the Jewish alphabet. What does a Tav look like? Go and make, in Hebrew, a Tav means a mark, right? Yeah? Nachon? Tav means a mark. What does a Tav look like? So you think a Tav looks like this. But what does a Tav look like in Kitab Ivri? What's Kitab Ivri? Yeah. Kitab Ivri is the ancient, original Canaanite Hebrew script that they used in the first temple. You know which one I'm talking about? I'll have a shir on it sometimes. It didn't look like the Aleph Beit that you know. It looked a bit different. A Tav looked like this. That's what a Tav looked like. You ever heard of X marks the spot? Yeah? This is a Tav. So, says Hashem to Gabriel, go and make an X on the heads of the Tzadikim. It's a midrash. Sheldio of ink. So when the destruction happens, the tzaddikim won't get it. Okay? The Yamusa said they won't die miyad immediately. Adam, and make a red mark on the heads of the Rishayim, kidei sheyishtu b'hem malchei chabala. Okay? So that they will die. Meaning that they're a tzaddikim, and they're Rishayim, right? The good guys should survive, the bad guys should die. That's what God says to Gabriel. That's not how it happened. Nichnasa kategoria. So another malach came in to argue against it. Lifnei Kodesh Baruch Hu va'amra lefanav, and he said to Hashem, Ribono shel Olam, manishtanu elu me'elu. Okay? Why are these people surviving and these people not surviving? Why did these people live and these people die? What's the difference between them? So Hashem answers in this midrash, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, I don't know what you're talking about. Halalu tzadikim gemurim, but halalu rishayim gemurim. These people are total tzadikim, and these people are total rishayim. Why would you even ask that question? Amra la, so the malach says to Hashem, Haya b'yadam limchot v'lo michu. The tzadikim could have done something about it. They could have objected. They could have got involved. They could have tried to influence the tzaddikim, the Rishayim, and they didn't bother. They just led their own nice, holy lives while the whole of society went, you know, to pieces. So Hashem says to the Malach, Amalei, so he says to the Malach, Galui v'yadua lefanai. I know, I can tell you, says Hashem to this Malach, She'im michu, even if they'd have tried to make a difference, lo hayim makabli mech, would have listened. Even if the tzaddikim would have tried, they wouldn't have listened. So, don't blame them. To Amr Lefanav, the last word goes to the Malach. The Malach says to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Im Galui LeBiyadu LeFanecha, even if you knew it wouldn't make a difference, Lifneihem Migi, they didn't know it wouldn't make a difference. And that's the end of the conversation. And the Tzadikim didn't get that protection. Because even if it wouldn't have made a difference, they didn't know it wouldn't have made a difference. They should have tried. They had an obligation to try. And Hashem says, you're right. Okay, you're right. Even if they were Tzadikim Gemurim, and even if it actually wouldn't have helped, they had to make the effort. Which is a very strong source, if you think about it, the idea that you can't just turn around and say, I'm alright, my society's alright, my kids are alright, my community's okay, let everybody else sink on the Titanic. You can't do that. You have an achrayut. We have an obligation to Klal Yisrael as a whole, and to the human people as a whole, to do something, whatever we can. Whether it'll work or whether it won't work, you have to try. Okay? And there are all sorts of ways that you can do that. Let me just talk about one last thing before we stop. There are lots of other things that Asara Batavis is connected with. The next one I'm not really going to talk about at length, but that Rabbi Kagan is going to talk about, which is Asara Batavis is the date. Actually, it was a little bit before that, where the Torah was actually translated. The Eighth of Tevis was translated into Greek. There's a word for the Greek translation of the Torah called the Septuagint. Septuagint. What Septuagint mean? What Septuah? Seven. Actually, it was 70. The 70 Tzadikim, the 70 Rabbonim that went in the room to translate the book. Rabbi Kagan is going to talk about that. Why exactly it was so bad that they translated the Torah into Greek? What was the problem? That somehow it lost the connection with the original understanding of the Torah, and that's also the day that prophecy ended, this whole period, which is connected in many ways with the translation to Greek. I put you some notes there, you can look more in your own time, etc. This is also, if you were in Shul this morning, which you probably weren't, but if you saw the Slichas that they say in Shul on Sarah Batavis, it talks about the death of Ezra. Yeah, we don't think much about Ezra, right? Who thinks a lot about Ezra? But Ezra was a very big deal. Ezra died on the 9th of Tevet. Yesterday was his yahrzeit, okay? And Ezra was compared in many ways to Moshe. He's critical to many of the things that we do in Judaism. And he very, very strongly connected, I say, with Kabbalah, Satira. And there's all sorts of sources there about the death of Ezra, the death of Nehemiah. There's also a kind of oblique reference to Christmas as well, which is very interesting, because there's a whole shiur, which I'm not going to give you now, as to why Asara Batavis almost always coincides pretty much with the week of Christmas and the birth of Jesus and all of that stuff. And there is a strong connection between them that maybe part of Asara Batavis is connected with the fast day because of the birth of that whole movement in Christianity. I didn't make that up. There's a whole bunch of sources that connect like that as well, but I'm not getting into that now. I just want to say one last thing before we finish. Go over just to the last source on page 6. I just want to give you a little bit of modern Israeli history in connection with Asara Batavis. Asara Batavis out there in Israel is called, and like I said to you before, this idea of connecting the whole community, it's called Yom HaKadish HaKlali. What's Yom HaKadish HaKlali? The General Society Day of Saying Kaddish. Why did they need that? What was that for? So after the Holocaust, in the late 1940s, there were literally millions of people who had lost relatives. And I can't imagine, none of us in this room were alive then, and I can't imagine what it's like being in a world where every single person you know lost tens of their family. The kind of feeling of mass depression that must have set into people is, I can't even begin to think about how that could have been. But one of the most difficult things of all is that many of these people did not know which day to say Kaddish for those relatives. They didn't know which day they died. Sometimes they could trace it back and they could find, you know, some eyewitness account that your relative was, you know, put in the gas chambers on this day or that day. But many people just didn't know. People were killed, shot in different actions. And therefore, what they decided to do is the chief rabbinate in 1949, they chose the 10th of Tevet today as the Yom HaKadish HaKlali. This was going to be the memorial day for all the people that you didn't know when they die to say Kaddish. And many, many shuls do this. They have someone designated to say Kaddish or a number of people saying Kaddish for all those people that they don't know which day that they died. And which place did they actually decide to make the central place for this, was, and you actually won't relate to this so much, but it's interesting for you to know, was Har Tzion. Where is Har Tzion? Did you know where the Zion Gate is into the Old City? Okay, here's your next
Old City orientation. You've been through this. Okay? Here's the Old City, like this. Yeah? Here's Jaffa Gate. Here's where you go in, Jaffa Gate. There's another gate over here called
Shav Tzion, right? The Zion Gate. You got the snake path?
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Go through Shav Tzion. Am I getting any feedback here? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Have you guys been walking around Jerusalem?
No.
Do you get out enough?
No.
No, you don't, do you? We need to do like a 3-day walking tour around Jerusalem.
That'd be sick.
Okay? Yeah. So that you could get, you know, a good understanding. But
at this side, if this is like, you know, Derech Hebron goes down here. Down here there's an entrance to Jerusalem, to the Old City, which is called Har Tzion, Shar Tzion. This is Har Tzion. This mountain is Har Tzion. It's where the Diaspora Yeshiva is and a bunch of churches as well. Now, in 1949, that was the last place the Jews could stand because all of this was Jordanian.
You get me? The Kotel was held by Jordan, the Old City, the Rava, it had all been blown up, it had all been destroyed, and therefore the nearest anybody could stand to the Old City, to the Kotel, without getting shot by a sniper. And by the way, Mamilla, have you guys ever been to Mamilla?
Yeah.
Oh, Mamilla you've been to, yeah? Right? Okay? Mamilla, which is down here, Mamilla was a no man's land. There was nothing there. There were no shops. There were a few in the 40s and 50s. There were a few trees. I have a friend. I think I've told you this story before. I have a friend in London. Okay, she's a bit older than me. She was a kid. Her family owned orchards in this valley at the time where Mamilla is now. And the Jordanians sitting on the wall there used to take pot shots. They used to snipe at the people who went to collect the fruit, the Jewish farmers, from the things, and therefore they needed to collect the fruit, that was their livelihood, so they used to send the kids, because usually the Jordanians didn't kill the kids. And she said she was sent with baskets there, in like, you know, white flags and baskets to kind of put fruit in and bring it back. That's how people were living in Mamilla in the late 40s, 50s. So people would stand on Har Tzion and they would look over and they would cry because all the shuls had been blown to pieces by the Jordanians, they'd been destroyed. They would stand there and cry. So the Rabbanut said, this is the place that we need to do this commemoration, because that's where it's going to make you feel that sense of sadness. And they made this Yom HaKadish HaKlali. Now, in the end, both of those things kind of didn't work out. Because, of course, Har Herzl, just over here, that's Har Herzl over there, Yad Vashem was put on Har Herzl, and so the focus changed from here to Har Herzl. And Har Herzl really took off. The military cemetery and also the Yad Vashem building, and so the focus really moved there and people started doing their Holocaust stuff there rather than here. And also, of course, after the Six-Day War, what happened here?
That all of this area was taken back by Israel.
Okay? And therefore, the whole idea of Har Tzion as being the place that you look over the destruction was kind of just wiped off the map, because Baruch Hashem, that was all removed. And then they gradually rebuilt it, and they're still rebuilding it. They're still doing a whole bunch of things. You know the Churva Synagogue?
Mm-hmm.
The big one, the big white dome in the rubber, that was only built in the last 6 or 7 years, and there are more shuls like that. But just to get into the mindset of Har Tzion at that time, I just want to read this last little tshuva with you in 29 and finish. So this is a tshuva, this is a shaila was written about a certain practice they used to have there on Asara B'Tevet. The Inyan HaChevel, Shenitlu B'Kadoshim. The question is, there was a rope that they used to use, that they'd been used by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, to hang Jews during the Holocaust. Are they allowed the Hashatz Bahar Tzion, that the Shliach Tzibur on Har Tzion, Mishtabesh Bo Lehitazeh B'Tzvilato, would use that rope to as his gartle for the davening on Asara B'Tevet? You get the case? Is that right or is that wrong? I mean, what do you think, by the way? Is that right or is that wrong? Do you think it's right to use a rope that was used as a rope to hang people as the gartle, as a commemoration to make?
No, I don't think. I mean, you're commemorating what happened. Why
the point? To make people cry, to give people that sense of oi, that sense of. So look what he says. Hadat Asher Shel Vada Har Tzion, the committee of Har Tzion. Shebein Yemashi Yaviu Haolim Chevel Av Sheisiru Me'al Echad Ha'Eitzim. They take this tree, this rope off one of the trees in Europe. in Poland. Hashem, you come damam. Okay? That these terrible people, terrible things that happen, people have been killed. Manali havada in Higushib is manshim atitim, but yom asara b'teves. And when they would get together on asara b'teves on Har Zion, the Bet Knesset shall Har Zion, leit palel lahatkin, ashamot harugim vakadoshim, azit azeh hachazon b'chevel zeh. The chazon would wear this rope. Is this right or is this wrong? They're asking, are we doing the right thing? And in the end, the tshuva actually was, no, you're not doing the right thing. A rope which was used, God forbid, to hang people with, should not be still in use. It should be buried. It should be put away, like any of these things were. And they said, we understand why you're doing it. We understand what it's for. But it's actually not the right thing to do with a rope like that, and don't use it. But my interest is that this is what was happening very much today on Asara B'Teves in Har Zion. Now, of course, they shifted it to Yom HaShoah. You know, Yom HaShoah. When is Yom HaShoah? It's in Nissan. Yom HaShoah was around the time of the liquidation of the Warsaw Ghetto and the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. What's the problem with having Yom HaShoah in Nissan? Nissan is like Pesach, and it's close to Pesach, and you're not meant to have any kind of Tanit or Psalm in Nissan. It's the month of Zimcha, the month of Gula. So there was this friction within the religious and the non-religious communities. Should we be having our Yom HaShoah in Nissan? Better we should be having it on Tisha B'Av or even on Asara B'Teves, etc., etc. But again, that kind of shifted as well, and I think people have kind of said, you know something, that's what everybody else has, Yom HaShoah, it's not the end of the world, and I think that more and more, it's a habit in Nissan, I mean, and I think more people are connecting more with Yom HaShoah, but you should just know that Yom HaShoah had this tension in it between the religious and the non-religious communities who said that we've got enough days that we can use instead of this. So, all of that, just to wrap it up, in terms of Asara B'Teves, there's a lot going on Asara B'Teves. There's the whole historical angle of Nebuchadnezzar and the way that we reacted and whether we should have been independent or less independent and what we did wrong. There's the whole angle of your responsibility, our responsibility to connect the Tzom, to make a Tzomet and connect the Jewish people together in society. And what can you do to do that? And the whole medrash about the Tzadikim who just let the Rishayim, you know, do their thing and didn't get involved even though they might have helped. They didn't know that they wouldn't help. And then there's the whole Klali angle in the modern day times of Asara B'Teves and the relevance that it has for people, especially in Israel, but in many ways all around the world, although that's fading a little bit, and other days have taken over. So there's a lot going on. There's more than I've even talked about. And Rabbi Kagan is going to be talking about other angles. So, you know, hopefully at least that gives you a little bit of context to understand. But think about it. When your tummy begins to go in the middle of the day, if you're fasting, let that be a reminder to you to think about, oh, yes, what am I going to do to serve Klal Yisrael better than I have been doing up till today? And Be'ezrat Hashem, we should make the days sason, v'simcha, yamim tovim, and that should come very soon, please God. Okay?